Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. One sure sign of the season is our annual Granny Annie program, in which we talk about the importance of sharing family histories and stories during holiday family gatherings. Since 2005, the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration has been encouraging youngsters in grades 4 through 8 to record the stories in writing or on tape. Many of them are compiled in a book. We'll be hearing some of those interviews on today's program, and we may read some, too. With me in studio are two women who encourage the gathering of family histories. Connie McIntyre is an author and co-director of the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration. Martha Stegmeier is the program director for the St. Louis Public Schools at Springboard, an organization dedicated to stimulating curiosity and learning among young students. Well, we must be close to Thanksgiving, Connie and Martha, because here we are again. Nice to see you both.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
Connie, let me start with you and just kind of recap for those who may not have heard us before. Why are the family histories and stories so important?
Oh, my. Family stories are what hold us all together within our family and tie us together from family to family all around the world, actually. It's been so fascinating through the years to enjoy the stories that students send to us and to see how each family is so unique and so interesting. And at the same time, we feel immediately connected.
Is this something that families typically do?
Unfortunately, most families do not, and that's what we're trying to make a difference in that area, because it's just such a treasure of stories available out there just for the asking. But that's the key. The key is taking the time and giving some thought to, and maybe building up a little courage to ask the questions that you haven't asked before.
And that's what you're asking of young people, is to take the initiative in this sort of thing.
We are, because young people can be very brave. And oftentimes, older relatives are willing to talk to youngsters when they perhaps wouldn't talk or haven't talked to their children about it. They might be more willing to talk to a niece or nephew or a grandchild.
You know, Martha, I can't count the number of times I've heard people say, gee, I wish I had asked grandma or grandpa or some family member about something in the family history. But it's too late now. They're gone.
Yes. And, you know, just to add to what Connie said, if you have members of the younger generation spending time with you at Thanksgiving, this is a perfect time to perhaps maybe you broach the subject that you would like to share with a niece or nephew or a grandson, a granddaughter, something from your past. They may be reluctant to take the first step, but if you are willing to share your stories or at least get started with one.
There are a lot of stories out there that people are just dying to tell, I'm sure, if only somebody would ask.
Yes.
Yeah. How does the St. Louis school system and Springboard work together? What are you doing that's related to what we're talking about today?
Well, Springboard and I got involved with the Granny Annie Family Stories Project a number of years ago because Connie was a teaching artist for Springboard and taught a bookmaking and book writing program in St. Louis Public Schools for a number of years and then a playwriting program. A few years later, though, we realized that maybe teaching students some of the skills involved in the Granny Annie would be a good thing in terms of how to interview, how to take notes during an interview, how to write, and then specifically how to revise the stories. And so several years ago, Connie developed a professional development teachers workshop. Originally, it was two different ones, teaching teachers how to teach these mm-hmm. skills, which could be used in the Granny Annie or otherwise. And now we have one workshop that we offer teachers in the St. Louis Public Schools, but Springboard also offers that to teachers throughout the area.
And within the school system, how do kids respond?
Well, you know, Connie, help me with this, but over the years we've had a number of students in St. Louis Public Schools write stories for the Granny Annie that were either published in the book or online, but certainly submitted. I think one of the things that really comes to mind with this project is that this is the real world. This is an example of kids using writing to accomplish their own purposes. A lot of times kids turn in writing and the only person that sees it is their teacher. This is an example of writing that has a larger purpose than just for their teacher.
So, Connie, it's a multifaceted educational process for these youngsters.
It absolutely is. And what we have heard from teachers is that some students who have been reluctant writers get really excited about the Granny Annie. Maybe not initially. Maybe at first they're like, how is this going to work? Is there really anything interesting in my family to tell, or who will I talk to, or whatever? But once they get started and they discover that there are interesting stories, it's so motivating and it's so empowering to them as an individual and as a young person starting to understand who they are and who their family is and how they fit in the larger world. And the whole project can be quite motivating to a child who maybe does not think of themselves as a writer and maybe hasn't showcased their writing in any other way, but an interesting story gives them an opportunity to be a star.
How do you find these kids, or do they find you?
They really find us, which I find quite exciting. We have our website, and we are in contact with teachers and students who we've dealt with in the past. But other than that, it's word of mouth and people just finding us through searches on the website, because we receive submissions from all over the country every year. And many years we have submissions from outside the country from people who have just found us and like the idea and jump in.
Well, you're working now on yet another edition of the annual Granny Annie book. This is your eighth edition. Is that correct?
That's right.
And are you collecting stories at this point for that edition now, or have they already been collected?
Well, the stories that will be published in Granny Annie Volume 8, which will come out in May, can be submitted at any time up to February 1st of next year, of 2013. So there's still plenty of time. We have received some stories already, but we won't begin reading until after February 1st. So there's plenty of time for people to think about how they might like to be involved, for teachers to think about how they would like their students to be involved, for parents to talk to their child's teachers and give them the website information.
What are the basic guidelines for this? And we'll have a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org so folks can get all of the details. But basically, who are you looking for? What are the guidelines?
Yes, thank you for making that available. Basically, this submission process is open to students in grades 4 through 8. So any student in that age group, or homeschooled students of that age group in that age group, or international students, as long as they fit that age group, they're welcome to submit. The submission form is online, and the guidelines are there. The story has to be no more than 500 words long, so it's not a huge investment, but it's enough space to really develop an interesting story.
And Martha, within the school system itself, how are you coordinating this, getting kids involved for Granny Annie?
Well, as a program coordinator for springboard programs in the St. Louis Public Schools, I work with about 25 schools. And so I'm sort of the resource person for those schools in terms of any program that Springboard has, as well as that it's out in the bigger community. And this program, Don, I wanted to say in terms of, you know, educational, you know, values, this program is very much supportive of the district's character education program. Students learn, you know, firsthand from their grandparents, their aunts, about perseverance, about persistence, valor, courage, fortitude, but also about the place of things like compassion and humor. So this is really important as the teachers are working with the students, developing their own characters.
When one goes over the stories, it becomes very clear that the subject matter really runs the gamut. I mean, there's a lot of humor in there, and there's some stuff that's quite heavy, too.
You're right. Every volume seems to include, like you said, the whole gamut of human emotions, and can be quite inspiring and thought-provoking.
Let's listen to one of them before we take a break. And this I have kind of titled called Fiancés. And Connie, I would ask you to set that up. This was recorded last June, as I understand it, at Left Bank Books downtown. Is that correct?
Yes. Each year we have a book signing and author reading and art show at Left Bank Books in downtown St. Louis. It's usually the first Saturday in June That was June 2nd this year. And we invite all published Granny Annie authors to take part. This year we had 12 students who participated. Three of them came in from out of state, and the rest were St. Louis area authors and artists who were published by the Granny Annie.
Well, the first one, as I understand it, is Tristan Hecht. Does that name ring a bell with you?
Oh, yes. I remember his story well.
Can you set it up to any degree before you play it?
Oh, yes. We have received so many World War II stories through the years. And in the first couple of years, or the first few years, they were more stories about people who served in the war and actually remembered something from that experience. And it's been interesting. We've seen the shift through the years. Now we're receiving more stories about people who were youngsters during that time, or people who stayed back home and experienced the war in a different way. And this story was completely unique because it's about this author's grandmother, I believe it was, or great-grandmother, who watched a number of her friends go off to war. And this is how she made a contribution to her community and to her country during that war.
So this is Tristan Hecht.
This is a comedy. Feel free to laugh. My great-grandmother, Helen Milstein, grew up in Denver. She was the youngest of her siblings. She, unlike most girls at the time, went to college. Just before America joined World War II, she was dating six men. She was a construction agent. Her construction business started working for the Army just before the war. Every one of her boyfriends was asked to leave for the war. First one came to her and said, "I am leaving to join the war, but before I leave, I have a question. Will you marry me?" Helen thought to herself, "If I say no, he may not have any motivation to live. So I will say yes." And she replied yes, just before he left. The same happened with the rest of her boyfriends. Every day, while they were away at war, she wrote to them. One day, one of her fiancés came home. As she wondered what to say to him, he said, "I'm sorry, but I don't think the engagement will work out." And she replied, "I sadly agree," in the most polite voice she could muster. When her second fiancé came home, she said, "I'm really upset, but I don't think that the engagement will work out." "Are you sure?" he replied. "Well, I said yes because I didn't know if he would live if I did not say yes." After all of her fiancés came back, she told them the entire story. 2 years later, she met my great-grandpa. On their first date, she told him the entire story. "That is hilarious," he said. "When did you last talk to them?" "I talk to them all the time." "Are you very good friends with them?" "Yes." 5 years later, she got married to my great-grandpa. This story is important because it is one of the only stories about my great-grandma. And it has taught me to think about other people's welfare, because she only got engaged to the men so that they would live through the war.
All right, that's Tristan Hecht. You know, I have to think, Connie, there might be times when people, the older folks might be reluctant to tell some of their stories for fear they might be brought out just like this. Could be embarrassing from time to time.
Well, possibly, I suppose, depending on the story. But we do, of course, always have parent permission to publish the stories, and the students' permission as well. And we make a lot of effort to encourage students and teachers and parents to share the stories at whatever level they're comfortable with, within their own immediate family, within their extended family, within their classroom at school, if it's a school project, or even if it's not, somehow in their community, perhaps. We have a number of stories that we learn about that have been published in the local newspapers, and the sharing is a big part of the whole project.
I'm really joking, of course, about that. I know this is going to be watched very closely, Martha. I'm sure that you watch that very closely as well.
You might have some skeletons in your closet.
Maybe that's why I asked the question. We've got to take a break now. We're talking about sharing family histories. My guests in studio, Connie McIntyre, who is co-director of the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration. Also with me is Martha Stegmeier, the program director for the St. Louis Public Schools at Springboard. We'll be back to hear more of the stories that have been recorded by these youngsters. I think we'll have one read, too. And we're also going to meet the father of one of the youngsters, whose story is now residing online with the Granny Annie Celebration. Back in just a moment. Oh, by the way, we'd like to get you into this. Those of you who are listening, if you have stories you'd like to tell us, we'd love to hear them. Maybe you've learned something you didn't know about your family by asking questions. Tell us what you learned that surprised you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, a tweet at STL on Air, or reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the importance of sharing family histories and stories. We're basically talking about getting the youngsters involved in this project by having them ask questions and interview various family members about their experiences, perhaps stories that have never been told or would never see the light of day unless those questions were asked. These stories have been, over the last several years, compiled in a book every year put out by the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration. And one is being compiled now, or will be, for publication in May. My guests in studio are Connie McIntyre, co-director of the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration. Martha Stegmeier is the program director for the St. Louis Public Schools at Springboard. And joining us by phone now is Bert Francis. His son Thomas was a fifth-grade student at Conway Elementary when he wrote his story for Granny Annie, titled The Scary Airplane Ride. It is on the Granny Annie website. Bert, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, sure. Hey, Connie, Martha. Hi, Don. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you. And I suppose you're very, very proud of your young son for what he's done and what has happened to his story.
Absolutely, as is he.
I bet he is. Is he in school today or is he at home?
He's home. He's actually home. If you'd like to talk to him instead of me, I think you'd get a better interview.
Well, we'll talk to him in just a moment.
But no, I think he's outside playing, but...
Okay, well, if he pops in, we'll put him on the air. Otherwise, tell us something about the process whereby, and your involvement in his putting this story together, The Scary Airplane Ride.
Sure. Well, I think initially he brought home a flyer from school early this year, and instructions as to how to interview an elderly family member and then submit the stories to Granny Annie and hopefully get it published. And so we thought about it for a little while, and it pretty quickly it came to our attention and everything that we should be interviewing a cousin of ours in Kansas City who was 92 years old at the time, and she is a great storyteller, and all of her stories are consistent, from one to another, so we know there's some accuracy to them. And Thomas was all excited about doing it and interviewing his cousin Camille in Kansas City over the phone and hearing her story and taking notes and then typing it all out in his own words. And he just loved doing it, as did she.
Can you give me a quick synopsis of what the story is all about?
Sure. Well, I think basically this was back in the 1920s when my mom, who was about 5 years older than Aunt Camille, and she were on my grandmother's farm. This was in Clarksburg, Missouri, not too far from Jefferson City. And my mom was probably about 14, 15 years old at the time. Camille maybe, maybe 9 or 10. And they were... Actually, my mom was driving. I think that was okay, Beth. I don't think he needed driver's licenses.
The statute of limitations has run out on that one, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So they were going down an old country road, and a biplane landed in the field, a cow pasture, real close to them. And this pilot jumped out, and he put down a sign that said, "Airplane rides $5." And that was a lot of money back then, but my mom had the money, and she said, "Well, I've already been on a plane ride, so Camille, why don't you go?" And she reluctantly hopped into the cockpit. It was one of these open cockpits, behind the pilot, and the only thing holding her in was one of these metal bars that came down in front of her, kind of like on a Ferris wheel. And she actually went up, and after about 5 or 10 minutes, they landed, and she was just totally petrified. She couldn't get out of the cockpit. She said her eyes were closed the whole trip, and she had to be helped out of the cockpit, and her knees were wobbling and all this sort of stuff. But it was quite an experience for her, and I don't think she's really been too anxious to go on plane rides since then. But it was a fun experience and unique, of course, for her. And of course, nowadays there's no way an airplane could land on private property like that. But it was a fun experience for her, and my mom more so just laughing at Camille.
So say there's a memory that's given a new life after about 90 years. So there's great value in that. Was this a story that you knew before young Thomas began to investigate?
I did not. And it was interesting to hear it.
Has all of this inspired him and perhaps you as well to do further investigating into some of that family history?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, he's working on a new Granny Annie story right now, talking to Camille again, who's now 93 and has more stories than you and I could even think about. So he's all excited about it, definitely.
Connie McIntyre, is that okay with you if he does another one?
Oh, yes, I'm over here. Thumbs up. That's been great news.
Thanks, Connie.
Bert, before we let you go, and I know you have other things to do the day before a holiday, what do you think is the value, the overall value of this experience to your whole family?
Well, I think the whole experience, helped to strengthen the relationship and the bond between Thomas and Camille. And with her living in Kansas City, we really don't get to see her that often. And it was wonderful for Thomas because there was an end of school award ceremony this past spring at Conway, and he was singled out and recognized and given an award for being one of the few students worldwide and only a handful here in Missouri to have his story published on Granny Annie. And, he was just really proud of the accomplishment. From my standpoint, I was an English major back in college, and I'm all for anything that encourages kids to improve their writing skills and their storytelling, proofreading, editing, even referring to a dictionary or a thesaurus every once in a while to pick out a word that maybe is a little stronger emphasis than what they were thinking about. And I think it's just, it's a wonderful organization. I think we're so fortunate to have Granny Annie here in St. Louis, and maybe Connie could address this if she hasn't already, but I'm not aware of any other company that does quite what they do regarding, encouraging youngsters to interview elderly family members and relatives and retell their stories in written form and then submit these stories, for possible publication. And for the kids, I think it kind of becomes a fun contest and competition so that, they can see if they can submit a story that's interesting or unique enough to catch the attention of the reviewers of all these stories and maybe get it published. And so, I'm a big fan of Granny Annie.
Well, that's very, very clear from hearing you talk. We'll put that question to Connie in just a moment. But one of the things that I am hearing from you and have certainly learned over the years in talking with Connie and others about this program is what a great bonding experience it is, not only for the kids and their parents, and then those other relatives who are brought into the whole process.
Yes. I mean, Camille was just thrilled to be picked by Thomas to participate in this interview, and she had a great time telling her story to Thomas. And later, we got a copy of it after it was published and got it to her, and she was just so proud to show it around to all of her friends in Kansas City. So it was a win-win for everybody.
Great. Well, that's what we all like to hear. Bert Francis, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations to you and certainly to young Thomas. And we hope you guys have a terrific holiday and compile some more stories when family members get together.
Well, thanks, and happy Thanksgiving. And when you're sitting around the table tomorrow, tell a few family stories.
Okay. Thank you, Bert Francis. Nice
thanks,
talking
Don.
To you.
Connie, thanks.
Thank you, Bert.
What about that, Connie, the question he raised with regard to anybody else doing this sort of thing?
Well, to my knowledge, we're unique. The Granny Annie is unique. I have not run into another program quite like ours. StoryCorps, of course, many people are familiar with StoryCorps, and there are many similarities. But we do focus on getting the young people involved. That's a real focus of ours. And then also, as Bert, I think, mentioned so thoroughly, the writing experience and how motivating it is to write for an audience bigger than, as Martha said, your teacher.
Anything to add to all of that, Martha?
No, I just think that the Granny Annie really encourages in students an interest in lifelong learning, that learning is all around you. It's not just in school, and that there are people who can bring, make history come alive. You know, one of the wonderful things about social studies is primary sources, you know, reading journals and what have you. Well, here are these primary sources right around the dinner table or, you know, sitting in your living room. So
there's something also inspiring, I think, for young people to see their words in print someplace, aside from a text they just turn into a teacher that comes back to them a couple of days later. You're acknowledging that, Martha.
Yes. And for those of you who can't see it, this is a paperback book. It's a light green color, and it has a part of a quilt on the front. Maybe Connie can talk about that. And then it's all these stories that are organized by from I think the oldest to close to the modern day.
So they're all published authors, if you will, at a very, very young age. We have a number of folks who want to get into this conversation. Before we continue ours, I want to bring in Kim before she goes away. She's been waiting for quite a while. She is in St. Louis. Kim, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you, Don. Good morning. Good morning to Connie and Martha. Always love the Granny Annie segments on that you have done on the show. And I am fortunate enough to have been a springboard teacher now for 12 years in the city public schools. And I do work with a younger group of students, usually kindergarten through about second grade. But I can tell you without a doubt that children love to hear, to share, and to retell stories. So even at a very young age, I think it's evident that they enjoy the process. And by having the older students have Granny Annie stories available to them within the schools as a writing program, as a work in progress that is combined with talking to family members and friends. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I just am happy to be in some way part of that process. And then on a personal note, very recently, another elder member of our family, who is my mother-in-law, she is a granny, Agnes, and she is 92 years old and shares wonderful stories from her past, and recently told a story about growing up on a farm and having something like 100 little chicks delivered, you know, to their farm, because that's how her parents did it, you know, would get, you know, these large number of little baby chicks delivered and see how they all did and try to get them up, and just sharing a story that just kind of came back to her so wonderfully, beautifully, about a cold, rainy, stormy night where her mom woke up all the kids and had them run outside and bring in all these little bitty chicks so they wouldn't drown in the rainstorm. And there they were in the kitchen with the wood fire, just, you know, warming up these baby chicks. Huh. And it's just one of those things that made me realize there are stories to be shared and remembered and told and written down, and just grateful for Granny Annie and Connie and Martha's work involved. So that's it. Thank you so much.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for calling. Nice endorsement for what both of you are doing in this regard. Let's take another phone call, and this one will be from Pauline. She's calling from Crestwood. Pauline, go ahead. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Don. My father, Paul Blandina, came from Sicily when he was 8 years old. He lived 5 miles from the Mediterranean Sea and never saw it until he took the train to Palermo. You know, they lived in very small areas all their lives. And then when he got to the United States and came to St. Louis, he was at the 1904 World's Fair. Now, can you imagine that, you know, all that experience, crossing the Atlantic in steerage? Well, anyway, he wrote his memoirs, and I think that story is remarkable. Then, in 1933, he went back to Sicily to visit his mother, and on the way home, he stopped at the Chicago World's Fair in 1933, and I was living in Long Island. in 1964, and he came to visit me. He and his and my mom, of course, came to visit me at the 1964 World
Fair
in Flushing. And he just, he was a man of so many interests, and his memoirs are priceless for our family.
I see kind of a thread there, Pauline, with regard to this World's Fair thing.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you say it's a remarkable story. It's the story of the way this country grew. I mean, you know, a lot of people came from Sicily and places just like it, and what made this country what it is today.
Yes.
I hope you brought some good recipes with him.
Oh, I have a... He was a chef. He was a chef in his own restaurant on Vendevenner and Lindell.
Well, my mouth is watering.
Okay.
Thank you so much for sharing that story with us.
Thank you.
This is true because it does give you a historical insight, does it not, in many of the stories that we've read over the years. How many stories have you published, do you think, Connie, for instance?
Oh, my goodness. I never thought to add them all up. But they're all on our website. Every story we've published from Volume 1 through Volume 7 and additional stories are published on our website and available for people to read. We have a thorough indexing of stories that's also available. If you go to our resources page and click on index, you can find stories on so many topics and many stories about immigration, stories about food, stories about whatever theme you're interested in.
And Don, can I just add that your callers talking about immigration reminded me that teachers can use the Granny Annie as sort of part of a bigger unit. So it might be a unit on civil rights or immigration, some movement in American history. Really lends itself well to that.
We have to take another break, but we have young Belle is waiting to be on the program, and I'll ask Belle to stay with us for another minute, and we'll bring her into the discussion in just a second. But I have to take the break in our discussion. We're talking about family histories and the importance of preserving them. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our discussion of the importance of preserving family histories. We're doing it today, as we've done for several years now, right around the holiday season, because that's when families get together. And it's a great opportunity to sit down and elicit some of those stories from folks that probably have a lot of them to tell if you'll just ask the questions. My guests in studio, Connie McIntyre, co-director of the Granny Annie Family Story Celebration. Martha Stegmaier is program director for the St. Louis Public Schools at Springboard. And now we will not wait any longer before bringing Belle into the conversation. Belle, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. How old are you, Belle?
I'm 10.
You're 10, and you're a Granny Annie aficionado already, aren't you?
Yep.
All right. What's your story? I don't mean the story that you're going to submit for Granny Annie, because you can't tell us that, can you?
Right.
What's your experience with Granny Annie?
Well, over the summer, I got some friends together, and we had our grandparents over, and we interviewed them to get some good stories.
And you feel you did, huh?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Can you give us, without telling us the exact story, can you tell us the kinds of things that you talked about?
Mostly, well, the sort of genres that we talked mostly about were mostly funny stories.
Where did you learn the word genre? That's a pretty good word for a fourth grader.
In a book about writing.
That a girl. Did you get that book about writing to prepare for your writing for Granny Annie?
No, I just found it on my mom's shelf and started reading it.
Your mom's cell phone, did you say?
Shelf.
A sofa. A shelf. Okay, I've got it. Well, your story has been written, is that correct?
Yes.
How long did it take you to write it?
I wrote it pretty quickly, 3 to 5 days.
And you've already sent it in?
Yes.
Do you want to say something to Connie McIntyre about that?
Sure.
Well, she's right here. Go ahead.
Connie. Hi, Belle.
Hi.
We're looking forward to seeing your story, I'm sure. Connie, do you have any idea whether you already have it?
I know we have received a number of stories already, so I know we have received a number of them, so that Bell's may be among them, I'm sure. I'm sure it probably is. And I would like just to mention that all of the stories are read by our volunteers, the selection committee, who are all volunteers. And the stories that we receive are read blind. In other words, the readers have no idea who wrote the story, or where, whether it's a boy or a girl from St. Louis or from wherever. They don't know anything about the writer. They only read the story and make their decision based on that. So, yes, I'm really excited that Belle's old enough now to submit, because I know she's been reading the Granny Annie books for a few years.
That's why it's a little tricky for us in talking about the story, because it is this blind reading
right,
process.
Right.
Martha, you wanted to ask a question?
Bell, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How did the interview go with your, was it your grandpa or your grandma?
It was my grandma.
How did that go? I mean, did you sort of have to pull information out of them, or were they kind of a pretty good storyteller, storykeeper?
She told me multiple stories, and then I sort of chose a story, and she would give me more details.
Oh, so this is just in one session, or did you meet several times? Or on the phone?
I think it was 5 times.
Wow.
Do you feel you got closer to your grandmom by doing this, Belle?
Yeah. And it's also just now, it's really fun to be able to tell my story whenever, over the holidays and Thanksgiving, we'll probably be having some people over, and I can read it.
Terrific. Well, we're going to wish you the best of success, and who knows? This time next year, we may be reading your story, if it gets through the whole process and winds up in the book or online. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What's really cool is that now she's going to be a storykeeper. And I know one of the stories, the first story in the current Granny Annie Volume 7 begins, this story is about my great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That's going back a few years, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. And I guess, Martha, you would know this, I'm sure, that when they get these histories and learn something about history, that it might awaken a lifelong interest in this, in the whole subject of history in general, not only family history.
Absolutely. I'm thinking like civil rights. I know that there was one school, this is not in St. Louis, this is somewhere else in the United States, where the kids interviewed local civil rights heroes and then wrote books on them. And I'm sure that that created a bond really with their community.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we have another story that was recorded back in June at Left Bank Books. And this is from, I think the name is Gabrielle Lewis. Is that correct, Connie?
Yes, Gabrielle.
And this this deals exactly with what Martha is talking about. So let's give a listen to that. We can continue our conversation.
As a seventh grader living in the 21st century, I can honestly say no one has ever given me a hard time because my mother is white and my father is African American. I have never endured racist comments coming my way. However, I can't say the same for my dad. In 1990, racism was still a problem in the small Texas town where my parents were attending college. The university was predominantly white, as were the fraternities on campus. It was hard for minorities to feel comfortable, and even harder for them to join a fraternity. My dad and 6 of his friends, who were all sophomores in college, decided this situation had to change and that they were the ones who could make this change happen. They met with the president of the university and told him, "Minority students aren't comfortable here. We want to start our own chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha. This organization is an African-American fraternity." And my dad and his friends thought it was important to bring groups to campus that celebrate different cultures. After some discussion with the university president and with the fraternity's national headquarters, the request was accepted. Starting this fraternity was brave of them, considering the environment of the college and surrounding town. Just 20 miles away, the Ku Klux Klan, a group that has tormented and killed African Americans because its members believe minorities don't deserve freedom or equality, was active. The Klan wasn't that violent in the town where my parents lived, but still, everyone was aware of its presence. The group sometimes held rallies nearby to remind everyone of its existence and its beliefs. Its members yelled slogans like "White Power" just to see if they could intimidate local residents. Because of the racist atmosphere, my mother and father received dirty looks when they were out in public or on campus. People would say things to them like, "You don't belong together." One time, they were in a restaurant and the waiter refused to serve them food. My dad had grown up on military bases his entire life. No one had ever treated him this way or called him offensive names. My dad thought that bringing in an African-American fraternity would slowly diversify his school, a change the school badly needed. I can't fathom why people would be racist. As my dad told me this story, I didn't understand why my caramel-colored skin would make me a target of hatred. My skin color does not determine who I am or how I act. My dad showed me this in abundance when he helped start a chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha in a small-minded and slightly racist town. Mahatma Gandhi said, "You must be the change you wish to see in the world." My dad and his fraternity embody this quote. They changed their campus and the mindset of the people around them. That change speaks for itself, and I'm glad to share my dad's story.
It's Gabrielle Lewis, and obviously a somewhat older child than Belle. But this gets into some really nitty-gritty stuff, doesn't it, Connie?
Yeah, the stories that we receive often do. Like you said, there's a whole gamut of topics that are addressed. And I think any older adult who has concerns about the next generation should just log on to the Granny Annie website and read some of these stories. And I think it's so heartwarming and inspiring and encouraging to see all these young people really caring about their families, their country, their communities, and really taking the time and effort to learn from what they are hearing from the their older relatives. And I wanted also just take a moment to say thank you to the Missouri Arts Council. They have provided financial assistance for our project last year, and we just learned they're also going to be helping us out this year with another grant that's from the Missouri Arts Council. And I really appreciate that, and I think there's going to be a whole new crop, if you will, of students and teachers and parents and families who will appreciate that support again this next year.
Very important, obviously. Martha?
And if anyone wanted to donate to the Granny Annie Family Stories Celebration, it's very easy to do that. You just go on the website, which is www.thegrannyannie.org. It's a 501c not-for-profit. And Connie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that any of the people who work on the Granny Annie, neither you nor Fran, has a salary.
No, there are no salaried employees. We've traditionally been a volunteer organization, and we're just now beginning to transform our organization into something that will be sustainable, because we think that the work the Granny Annie is doing needs to go on.
Let's take another phone call. Madonna has been waiting in Webster Groves to get on the program, so let's bring her in. Madonna, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to share a story. When my children were younger, we would visit my mom every Wednesday, and as she got older, she began to, and she was always the storyteller in our family, a story of family history, and as she got older, she would begin to repeat her stories. And so as my son and I and my mom would be playing pinochle, she would tell the same story again and again. And I remember talking to my son when he was 7 and saying, "No, I know that your grandma, Busha in Polish, was repeating this story." And my son, as a 7-year-old, said, "You know, that's okay, Mom. I don't mind hearing it over and over again. That way I'll be able to share these stories with my children."
All right, Madonna, thanks for that. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right. Passing those stories down and through the generations. And it's quite amazing how a story can retain its power and even perhaps become more powerful generations later.
We have one more that we can play for our audience here. This one is from a young woman, Ali Hanna, I believe is her name. Is there anything you can tell us about this one, Connie, before we play it?
Oh, this story... It's a very moving story, and I would like to actually just mention that the Hanna family came all the way from Ohio to come to the book signing at Left Bank Books to share this story. And it was, I had the opportunity to speak with a number of members of the family, and you can tell that this was a story that was very meaningful to the entire family. And I think the listeners will find the same thing is true.
It was a bright, sunny day in Rome, Italy. My mom was living there for 2 years because her dad was working for the American Embassy. Mom was 11 years old when she went on a field trip with her school. This was no ordinary field trip, though. She was going to the Vatican. The Vatican is a city within Rome where the Pope lives. The Pope is the head of the whole Catholic Church. At this time, the Pope was John Paul II. On the day my mom's school went, the Vatican was very crowded. She was stuck way back in the crowd with her school friends and family. She wanted to get to the front of the aisle so she could see the Pope walk down to the altar. Luckily, some kind people let her through to the front. As she emerged, my mom caught a glimpse of the Pope walking down the aisle. He was shaking everyone's hand and then shook my mom's. Just like everyone else, she was thrilled. When he was walking away, my mom shouted, "Jacek kocham," which means "I love you" in Polish. Pope John Paul II was the first and only Polish pope. My grandma is 100% Polish, so this pope was very special to my family. My mom was shocked when the pope turned around, walked toward her, smiled, and put his hand on her cheek. That was a very amazing moment for my mom. The only sad part was that none of her family or friends got to see it. Then about a week later, my grandma got a phone call. It was from one of her friends who had gone to the Vatican. Her friend said, "Did you like that picture of Debbie and the pope?" My grandma was confused and shocked at the same time. Apparently, Vatican photographers had snapped a picture at the exact second that the Pope patted my mom on the cheek. My grandma immediately went to the Vatican and bought the picture. To this day, we still have the picture hanging up in our house. Pope John Paul II died on April 2, 2005. He was 84 years old. He is on the way to becoming a saint, so because of that, my mom has been touched by a saint.
And the story that was obviously well appreciated by the audience there at Left Bank Books. Right. You know, some of these kids not only write well, and they tell their stories very well. I mean, that's a very nice reading, and that's also part of this whole process. What did you want to say, Martha?
And Don, on the website, there are just wonderful resources for teachers, and there's one on basically conducting the interview and then writing. And one of the things that Connie and Fran are really trying to get the kids to do is to capture details that will enable them to vividly recreate the storykeeper's experience for the readers, to recreate the experience through words.
And as again, and the way they read the stories is very important too, because if it's not read reasonably well, then it's not going to be appreciated at all. Before we have kind of a recap here, Connie, I should have done this at the beginning. Tell folks who Granny Annie was. This is not a figment of somebody's imagination.
No. Granny Annie is a woman I got to know when I lived in New Jersey, your home state, Don. Mm-hmm. And she and I together collaborated to create five books about her family's history. Her, Anne's mother was a lifelong storyteller, so she had lots of stories that Anne and the family wanted to have preserved. And it was kind of Anne's idea and kind of my idea, and we kind of put our ideas together, and it just was a fabulous project. And I went on from that experience to work with families of all types for about 20 years, saving family stories and writing them down to be passed on. And that's kind of how the Granny Annie came to be. The idea for it came from all of that experience with Anne and following that time. And so when my co-director and I, Fran Hamilton and I, put this idea together and needed a name for it, it was kind of a natural to choose the Granny Annie.
Well, you only have about a minute left. Let's recap in the sense, tell people, families who want to get involved in this and submit stories, what they can do. what they should do. Please, we've got about a minute.
Okay, 1 minute. Please do join us if you are at all interested. We welcome you. We like to say that the Granny Annie is the kind of celebration that gets better as more people participate. And it's so true. We would love to hear your story and would love for you to capture a story that you maybe haven't heard before and share it. So go to our website. As Don told you, the link is on the KWMU site, thegrannyannie.org. Go to the Submit Stories page, and it's kind of an frequently asked questions page where it answers all your questions. There are links to the forms that you need to submit along with your story, and a page full of resources for writers and teachers and parents, and the stories to read, the books available for sale, the donation page. There's a lot there. So help yourself and jump in. We'd love to have you.
And it's all in preparation for a book that will come out on the 1st of May.
That's
Connie
right.
McIntyre, thank you so much for being with us again. Nice to see you. Have a great holiday.
Great
Martha
to
Stegmaier,
be here.
Thank you so much for being with us. A happy Thanksgiving to you, and keep up the good work, both of you.
Thanks so much,
Don.
Fascinating stuff. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, our 11 a.m. broadcast is preempted for Lynn Rosetto Casper's Turkey Confidential. But at 10 p.m., we'll revisit our discussion about the Native American culture and community that once existed at Cahokia. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.